Part 3. Moving in Clades. Chapter 8. The Neotenic Cultural Republic, 1796-91. The dreams were pleasant, dreams of warmth and light, an animal's life, an eternal present. Consciousness returned in tingling pain, like blood seeping into a leg long numbed. He struggled to unify himself, to assume the burden of being Lindsay again, and the pain of it made him claw the grass, spattering his naked skin with dirt. Chaos roared around him, reality in its rawest form, a buzzing, blinding confusion. He sprawled on his back in the grass, gasping. Above him, the world swam into focus. Green light, white light, a brown framework of branches. Solidity returned to the world. He saw a living spray of branching leaves and twigs, a form of such fantastic beauty that he was overwhelmed with awe. He heaved himself over and slithered toward the tree's rough trunk, hauling his naked flesh through the sleek grass. He threw his arms around the tree and pressed his bearded cheek against the bark. Ecstasy seized him. He pressed his face against the tree, sobbing in frenzy, torn with deep visionary rapture. As his mind coalesced, he burned with insight, a smoldering oneness with this living being. Helpless joy pervaded him as he joined its serene integration. When he called for help, two young shapers wearing hospital whites answered his broken cries. Taking his arms, they helped him stagger across the lawn through the arched stone doorway of the clinic. Lindsay was afflicted by language. His thoughts were clear, but the words wouldn't come. He recognized the building. It was the mansion of the Tyler clan. He was back in the Republic. He wanted to speak to the orderlies, ask them how he had returned, but his brain couldn't shuffle his vocabulary into order. The words waited agonizingly on the tip of his tongue, just past his reach. They took him down an entry hall crowded with blueprints and glass-topped exhibits. The left wing of the mansion, with its suite of bedrooms, had been stripped down to the polished wood and filled with medicinal equipment. Lindsay stared helplessly into the face of the man on his left. He had the smooth grace of a shaper and the riveting eyes of a superbright.
"You are..."
Lindsay burst out suddenly.
"Relax, friend. You're safe. The doctor's on her way."
Smiling, he draped Lindsay in a broad-sleeved hospital gown, tying it behind him in an easy flurry of knots. They seated him under an overhead cerebral scanner. The second orderly handed him an inhaler.
"Whiff up on this, cousin. It's tagged glucose. Radioactive. For the scanner."
The superbright whacked the curved white dome of the machine affectionately.
"We've gotta look you over. I mean, right down to the core."
Lindsay sniffed obediently at the inhaler. It smelled sweet. The scanner whirred down its upright track stand to settle around the top of his head. A woman entered the room. She carried a wooden instrument case and wore a loose medical tunic, short skirt, and muddied plastic boots.
"Has he spoken?" she said.
Lindsay recognized her gene line.
"Giuliano,"
he said with difficulty. She smiled at him. She opened her wooden case with a squeak of antique hinges.
"Yes, Abelard," she said. She gave him a look.
"Margaret Giuliano," Lindsay said.
He could not interpret the look, and the inability filled him with a sudden reviving trickle of energy and fear.
"The cataclysts, Margaret. They put you on ice."
"That's right."
She reached inside the case and produced a dark candy in a little creased paper tray.
"Have a chocolate."
Lindsay's mouth flooded with saliva.
"Please,"
he said reflexively. She popped the candy into his mouth. It was cloyingly sweet. He chewed it reluctantly.
"Scarpa," Giuliano told the two technicians, "I'll handle this."
The two superbrights left, grinning. Lindsay swallowed.
"Another," she said.
"Never much cared for candy," Lindsay said.
"That's a good sign," she said, closing the box.
She examined the scanner's screen and pulled a light pen from the cluster of loose blonde hair at her ear.
Those chocolates were the center of your life for the last 5 years.
The shock was bad, but he had known it was coming. His throat felt dry.
5 years?
You're lucky to have any you left, she said. It's been a long treatment, restoring a brain altered by heavy dosage of PDKL-95, complicated by changes in your spatial perception caused by the arena artifact. It's been a real challenge. Expensive, too.
She studied the screen, nibbling the end of her light pen.
But that's all right. Your friend Wellspring footed the bills.
She had changed so much that it dizzied him. It was hard to reconcile the disciplined pacifist of the Midnight Clique, Margaret Giuliano of Goldreich Tremaine, with this calm, careless woman with grass stains on her knees and loose, dirty hair.
Don't try to talk too much at first, she said. Your right hemisphere is handling language functions through the commissure. We can expect neologisms, poverty of speech, a private idiolect. Don't be alarmed.
She circled something on the display screen and pressed a control key. Cross-sections of his brain shuffled past in bright false-color blues and oranges.
How many people in this room? She said.
You and I, Lindsay said.
No sense of someone behind you, to your left?
Lindsay twisted to look, scraping his forehead painfully on an inner node of the scanner.
No.
Good. The commissure approach was the right one, then. In split-brain cases, we sometimes get a fragmentation of consciousness, a ghost image overlooking the perceptual self. Let me know if you feel anything of the sort.
No, but outside I felt...
He wanted to tell her about the moment when waking had come suddenly, his long, epiphanic insight into self and life. The vision still blazed within him, but the vocabulary was completely beyond him. He knew suddenly that he would never be able to tell anyone the full truth. It was not something that words could hold.
Don't struggle, she said. Let it come easily. There's plenty of time.
My arm, Lindsay said suddenly.
He realized with confusion that his right arm, the metal one, had turned to flesh. He raised the left one. It was metal. Horror overloaded him. He had turned inside out.
Careful, she said. You may have some trouble with space perceptions, left and right. It's an artifact of the commissural dominance, and you've had a new rejuvenation. We've done a lot of work on you in the past 5 years, just to mark time.
The careless ease of it stunned him.
Are you God? Lindsay said.
She shrugged.
There have been breakthroughs, Abelard. A lot has changed, socially, politically, medically. All the same thing nowadays, I know, but think of it as spontaneous self-organization, a social pregogenic leap to a new level of complexity.
Oh, no, Lindsay said.
She tapped the scanner, and it whirred upward off his head. She sat before him in an antique wooden office chair, curling one leg beneath her.
Sure you don't want a chocolate?
No.
I'll have one then.
She pulled a candy from the case and bit into it, chewing happily.
They're good.
She spoke unaffectedly, her mouth full.
This is one of the good times, Abelard. It's why they thawed me out, I think.
You changed.
Ice assassination does that. They were right, the cataclysts. Right to put me out. I was calcifying. One moment I was floating through the math hall in the Cosmosity, printouts in my hand, on my way to the office, mind full of little problems, worries, schedules. I was dizzy for a moment. I looked around and everything was gone, deserted, trashed. The printouts were crumbling in my hands, clothes full of dust. Goldreich Tremaine in ruins, computers down, classes all gone. The world leaped 30 years in a moment. It was total cataclysm. For 3 days I chased down news, trying to find our clique, learning I was history. And then it came over me in a wave. I preaked, Abelard. My preconceptions shattered. The world didn't need me, and everything I'd thought was important was gone. My life was totally futile. And totally free. Free, Lindsay said, tasting the word. Constantine, he said suddenly. My enemy.
He's dead, so to speak, Margaret Giuliano said. But it's a question of definition. I have the scans on his condition from his congenetics. The damage is very severe. He fell into a protracted fugue state and suffered an accelerated consciousness that must have lasted for subjective centuries. His consciousness could not maintain itself on the data it received from the arena device. It lasted so long that his personality has abraded away. Speaking metaphorically, he forgot himself to pieces.
They told you that? His siblings?
Times have changed, Abelard. Detente is back. The Constantine gene line is in trouble, and we paid them well for the information. Skimmer's Union lost the capital ship. Jastro Station is the capital now, and it's full of Zen serotonists. They hate excitement.
The news thrilled Lindsay. 5 years, he said. He stood up in agitation. Well, what's 5 years to me?
He tried to pace about the room, swinging dizzily. The left-right hemispheric confusion made him clumsy. He drew himself up and tried to get a grip on his kinesics. He failed. He turned to Giuliano.
My training. My kinesics. She nodded.
Yes. When we went in, we noticed the remnants of it. Early Shaper psychotechnic conditioning. Very clumsy by modern standards. It interfered with your recovery. So, over the years, we chased it down and extinguished it bit by bit.
You mean it's gone?
Oh, yes. We had enough cerebral dichotomy to deal with, without your training giving you dual modes of thought. Hypocrisy is a second state of consciousness and all that. She sniffed. It was a bad idea to begin with.
Lindsay sagged back into the scanning chair.
But all my life. And now you took it away. With feck.
He closed his eyes, struggling for the word.
With technology.
She took another candy.
So what?
She said, indistinctly munching.
Technology put it there in the first place. You have yourself back. What more do you want?
Alexandrina Tyler came through the doorway with a swish of heavy fabric. She wore the finery of her girlhood, a puffed floor-length skirt and a stiff cream-colored jacket with embroidered input jacks and a round neck-circling collar. She looked at the floor.
Margaret, she said, your feet.
Giuliano looked absently at the dried mud flaking from her boots.
Oh dear, sorry.
The sudden juxtaposition of the two women filled Lindsay with vertigo. A confused wash of tainted déjà vu bubbled up from some drugged cerebral recess, and for a moment he thought he would pass out. When he revived, he could feel that he had improved, as if some paralyzing sludge had trickled out of his head, leaving light and space.
Alexandrina, he said, feeling feebler yet somehow more real. You've been time? All this here?
Abelard, she said, surprised. You're talking.
Trying to.
I heard you were better, she said. So I brought you clothes from the museum wardrobe.
She showed him a plastic-wrapped suit, an antique.
You see, this is actually one of your own suits from 75 years ago. One of the looters saved it when the Lindsay mansion was sacked. Try it on, dear.
Lindsay touched the suit's stiff, age-worn fabric.
A museum piece, he said.
Well, of course.
Margaret Giuliano looked at Alexandrina.
Maybe he'd be more comfortable dressed as an orderly. He could fade into the background. Take a local color.
No, Lindsay said. All right, I'll wear it.
Alexandrina's been looking forward to this,
Giuliano confided as he struggled into the suit's trousers, ramming his bare feet past the wire-stiffened accordioned knees.
Every day she comes to feed you Tyler apples. I brought you here after the duel, Alexandrina said. Our marriage expired, but I run the museum now. I have a post here.
She smiled.
They sacked the mansions, but the family orchards are still standing. Your grand-aunt, Marietta, always swore by the family's apples.
A seam gave way in the shoulder as Lindsay pulled on the shirt.
You wolfed down those apples, seeds, stems, and all, Giuliano told him. It was a wonder.
You're home, Alexa, Lindsay said. It was what she had wanted. He was glad for her.
This was the Tyler house, Alexandrina said. The left wing and the grounds are for the clinic. That's Margaret's work. I'm the curator. I run the rest. I've gathered up all the mementos of our old way of life, all that was spared by Constantine's re-education squads.
She helped him pull the spacesuit-collared formal jacket over his head.
Come on, I'll show you.
Giuliano kicked off her boots and stood in her rumpled socks.
I'll come along. I want to judge his reactions.
The main ballroom had become an exhibit hall, with glass-fronted displays and portraits of early clan founders. An antique, pedal-driven, ultralight aircraft hung from the ceiling. Five shapers marveled over a case full of crude assembly tools from the Circumlunar's construction. The shapers' chic low-gravity clothing sagged grotesquely in the Republic's centrifugal spin. Alexandrina took his arm and whispered,
"The floor looks nice, doesn't it? I refinished it myself. We don't allow robots here."
Lindsay glanced at one wall and was paralyzed at the sight of his own clan's founder, Malcolm Lindsay. As a child, the dead pioneer's face, leering in ancestral wisdom from the tops of dressers and bookshelves, had filled him with dread. Now he realized with a painful leap of insight how young the man had been. Dead at 70. The whole habitat had been slammed up in frantic haste by people scarcely more than children. He began laughing hysterically.
"It's a joke," he shouted.
The laughter was melting his head, breaking up a logjam of thought in little stabbing pangs. Alexandrina glanced anxiously at the bemused shapers.
"Maybe this was too early for him, Margaret."
Giuliano laughed.
"He's right. It is a joke. Ask the cataclysts."
She took Lindsay's arm.
"Come on, Abelard, we'll go outside."
"It's a joke," Lindsay said.
His tongue was loose now, and the words gushed free.
"This is unbelievable. These poor fools had no idea. How could they? They were dead before they had a chance to see. What's 5 years to us? What's 10? 100?
"You're babbling, dear."
Giuliano walked him down the hall and through the mortared stone archway into dappled sunlight and grass.
"Watch where you step," she said. "We have other patients, not housebroken."
Beside the high, moss-crusted walls, a nude young woman was tearing single-mindedly at the grass, pausing to suck grime from her fingers. Lindsay was horrified. He seemed to taste the grit on his own tongue.
"We'll go outside the grounds," Margaret said. "Pongpian School won't mind."
"He's letting you stay here, is he? That woman's a shaper? A cataclyst? He owed a debt to the cataclysts. You're taking care of them for him."
"Try not to talk too much, dear. You might hurt something."
She opened the iron gateway.
"They like it here, the cataclysts. Something about the view."
"Oh my God," Lindsay said.
The Republic had run wild. The overarching trees on the museum grounds had hid the full panorama from him. Now it loomed over and around him in its full 5 kilometer range. A stunning expanse of ridged and tangled green, 3 long panels glowing in triple-crossed shafts of mirror-reflected sunlight. He'd forgotten how bright the sun was in circumlunar space.
"The trees," he gasped. "My God, look at them!"
"They've been growing ever since you left," Giuliano said. "Come with me. I want to show you another project."
Lindsay looked up through reflex toward his own former home. Seen from above, the sprawling mansion grounds bordered what was once a lively tangle of cheap, low-class restaurants. Those were in decline, and the Lindsay home was in ruin. He could see yawning holes in the red-tiled roofs of fused lunar slate. The private landing pad atop the mansion's 4-story tower was swamped in ivy. At the northern end of the world, up its sloping walls, a crew of ant-sized workmen tore languidly at the skeletal remains of one of the Wirehead hospitals. Shoals of clouds hid the old power grid and the area that had once been the Sowers.
"It smells different," Lindsay realized.
He stumbled on the bicycle path beside the museum's walls and was forced to watch his feet. They were filthy.
I need a bath, he said.
Either you crawl or you don't, right? If you've got skin bacteria, what's a little dirt? I like it, she smiled. It's big here, isn't it? Sure, Goldreich Tremaine 10 times this size, but nothing this open. A big, risky world.
I'm glad Alexandrina found her way back, Lindsay said.
Their marriage had been a success, because it had gotten her what she wanted most. At last he had made amends. It had always been a strain. Now he was free. The Republic had changed so much that it filled him with weird exultation. Yes, big, he thought, but nowhere near big enough. He felt a sense of impatience with it, a fierce longing to grab hold of something, something huge and basic. He had slept for 5 years. Now he felt every hour of that long rest pressing in on him with uncontainable reviving energy. His knees buckled, and Giuliano caught him with her shaper-strengthened arms.
Easy, she said.
I'm all right.
They crossed the openwork bridge over the blazing expanse of metal glass that separated two land panels. Lindsay saw the former site of the Sours beneath a raft of clouds. The once foul morass had become an oasis of vegetation so blindingly green that it seemed to shine even in the clouds' shadow. A tall, gangling boy in baggy clothing was running headlong beside the woven wire fence surrounding the Sours, tugging a large box kite into flight.
You're not the first I've cured, Giuliano said as they walked toward it. I've always said my super-bright students had promise. Some of them work here, a pilot project. I want to show you what they've done. They've been tackling botany from a perspective of pregogenic complexity theory. New species, advanced chlorophylls, good solid constructive work.
Wait, said Lindsay. I want to talk to this youngster.
He had noticed the boy's kite. Its elaborate paint job showed a nude man crammed stiflingly within the rigid planes of the box kite's lifting surfaces. A woman in mud-smeared corduroy leaned over the woven fence, waving a pair of shears.
Margaret, come see.
I'll be back for you, Giuliano said.
Don't go away.
Lindsay ambled unsteadily to where the boy stood, expertly managing his kite.
Hello, old cousin, the boy said. Got any tapes?
What kind?
Video, audio, anything from the Ring Council? That's where you're from, right?
Lindsay reached automatically for his training, for the easy network of spontaneous lies that would show the boy a plausible image. His mind was blank. He gaped. Time was passing. He blurted the first thing that came into his head.
I'm a sundog, from Serena Cluster.
Really? Post-humanism, pregogenic levels of complexity. Fractal scales, bedrock of space-time, pre-continuum ur-space. Have I got it right?
I like your kite, Lindsay hedged.
Old Cataclyst logo, the boy said. We get a lot of old Cataclysts around here. The kite gets their attention. First time I've caught a cicada, though.
Cicada, Lindsay thought. A citizen of CK. Wellspring had always been fond of slang. You're a local?
That's right. My name's Abelard. Abelard Gomez.
Abelard? That name's not too common. The boy laughed.
Maybe not in CK, but every fifth kid in the Republic's named Abelard. After Abelard Lindsay, the big historical cheese. You must have heard of him.
The boy hesitated.
He used to dress like you. I've seen pictures.
Lindsay looked at the boy's own clothes. Young Gomez wore a faked-up low-grav outfit, which sagged dreadfully.
I can tell I'm out of date, Lindsay said. They make a big deal out of this Lindsay fellow, do they?
You don't know the half of it, Gomez said. Take school. School's completely antique here. They make us read Lindsay's book, Shakespeare it's called, translated into modern English by Abelard Lindsay.
Is it that bad? Lindsay said, tingling with déjà vu.
You're lucky, old man. You don't have to read it. I've looked through the whole thing. Not one word in there about spontaneous self-organization.
Lindsay nodded. That's a shame.
Everybody's old in that book. I don't mean fake old like the preservationists here, or weird old like old Pong.
You mean Pongpyeon School? Lindsay said.
The warden, yeah. No, I mean everybody's used up too fast, all burnt up and cramped and sick. It's depressing.
Lindsay nodded. Things had come full circle, he decided. You resent the control on your life, he speculated. You and your friends are radicals. You want to change things?
Not really, the boy said. They only have me for 60 years. I've got hundreds, cousin. I mean to do big things. It's going to take a lot of time. I mean big things. Huge. Not like those little dried-up people in the past.
What kind of things?
Life-spreading, planet-ripping, world-building, terraforming.
I see, Lindsay said. He was startled to see so much self-possession in one so young. It must be the Cataclysm influence. They'd always favored wild schemes, huge lunacies that in the end boiled down to nothing. And that will make you happy? The boy looked suspicious.
Are you one of those Zen serotonists? Happy? What kind of scam is that? Burn happiness, cousin. This is the cosmos talking. Are you on the side of life or aren't you?
Lindsay smiled. Is this political? I don't trust politics.
Politics? I'm talking biology. Things that live and grow. Organisms. Integrated forms.
Where do people come in?
The boy waved his hand irritably and caught the kite as it swooped.
Never mind them. I'm talking basic loyalties now. Like that tree. Are you on its side? Against the inorganic?
His recent epiphany was still fresh in Lindsay's mind. The boy's question was genuine.
Yes, he said. I am.
You see the point of terraforming, then?
Terraforming, Lindsay said slowly. I've seen theories, speculations, and I suppose that it's possible. But what does it have to do with us?
A true commitment to the side of life demands the moral act of creation,
Gomez said promptly.
Someone's been teaching you slogans, Lindsay said. He smiled. Planets are real places, not just grids on a drawing board. The effort would be titanic, all out of human scale.
The boy was impatient.
How big are you? Are you bigger than something inert?
But it would take centuries.
You think that tree would hesitate? How much time do you have, anyway?
Lindsay laughed helplessly.
Fine, then. Are you going to live a squished-down little human life, or are you going to go for the potential?
At my age, Lindsay said, if I were human, I'd already be dead.
Now you're talking. You're as big as your dreams. That's what they say in CK, right? No rules, no limits. Look at the mechs and shapers.
The boy was contemptuous.
All the power in the world, and they're chasing each other's tails. Burn their wars and midget ideologies. Post-humanity's bigger than that. Ask the people in there.
The boy waved one hand at the wire-woven enclosure.
Ecosystem design, rebuilding life for new conditions. A little biochemistry, a little statistical physics. You can pick it up here and there. That's where the excitement is. If Abelard Lindsay was alive today, that's the sort of thing he'd be working on.
The irony of it stung Lindsay. At Gomez's age, he'd never had any sense either. He felt a sudden alarm for the boy, an urge to protect him from the disaster that his rhetoric would surely earn him.
You think so?
Sure. They say he was a hot preservationist type, but he sun-dogged off when the getting was good, didn't he? You didn't see him hanging around here to die of old age. Nobody really does, anyway.
Not even here? In the home of preservationism?
Of course not. Everyone over 40's on the black market for life extension. When they turn 60, they scarper for Tsarina Cluster. The cicadas don't care about your history or your genes. They take all clades. Dreams matter more.
Dreams, Lindsay thought. Dreams of preservationism turned into a black market scrabble for immortality. The dream of investor peace had rusted and collapsed. The dream of terraforming still had a shine on it. Young Gomez could not know that it too would surely tarnish. But somehow, Lindsay thought, you had to dream or die. And with new life pouring through him, he knew which choice was his. Margaret Giuliano leaned over the fence.
Abelard! Abelard, over here! You need to look at this!
The boy, startled, began reeling in his kite hand over hand.
Now this is luck! That old psychotech wants to show me something in the compound.
Go to it, Lindsay said. You tell her that I said to show you anything you like, understand? And tell her that I've gone off for a little talk with Pong Pian School. All right, cousin?
The boy nodded slowly. Thanks, old cicada. You're one of us.
Pong Pian School's office was a paper wasteland. Musty, cloth-bound books of concatenate law were heaped beside his wooden desk. Schedules and production graphs were pinned up at random in the room's ancient paneling. A tortoise-shell cat yawned in one corner and sharpened its claws in the carpet. Lindsay, whose experience with cats was limited, watched it guardedly. Pong Pian School wore a similar suit to Lindsay's, but newer and obviously hand-stitched. He had lost hair since his days in Goldreich Tremaine, and light gleamed dully on the dusky skin of his scalp. He swept a sheaf of records from the desk and paper-clipped them with skinny, wrinkled fingers.
Papers, he muttered. Trying to take everything off computers these days. Don't trust 'em. You use computers and there's always some mech ready to step in with new software. Thin edge of the wedge, Mavridis. Lindsay, I mean.
Lindsay is better.
You must admit it's hard keeping track of you. It was a fine scam you pulled, passing yourself off as a senior genetic in the rings.
He looked at Lindsay. Lindsay caught part of the look. The experience of age made up somewhat for his loss of kinesic training. Pong Pian School said,
How long has it been since we last talked?
What year is it?
Pong Pian School frowned. No matter. You were in Dimbauska then, anyway. Things aren't so bad here under Neotenic Aegis, eh, Mavridis, you admit? Gone a bit to rack in ruin, but all the better for the tourist trade. Those Ring Council types eat it up with a spoon. Tell the truth, we had to go into the old Lindsay mansion and bash it about a bit, make it more romantic. Had some mice installed. You know mice? Bred 'em back in the wild state from lab specimen. You know their eyes weren't pink in the wild? Funny look in those eyes. Reminds me of a wife of mine.
Pong Pian School opened one of the drawers in his cavernous desk and tossed in his sheaf of clipped papers. He pulled out a crumbling wad of graphs and started.
What's this? Should have been done weeks ago. No matter. Where were we? Oh, yes, wives. I married Alexandrina, by the way. Alexa's a fine preservationist. Couldn't risk her slipping away.
You did well, Lindsay said. His marriage contract had expired. Her new marriage was a sound political move. It did not occur to him to feel jealousy. That had not been in the contract. He was glad that she had secured her position.
Can't have too many wives. It's what life's all about. Take Georgiana, for instance, Constantine's first wife. Talked her into a trace of shatter, no more than 20 mics, I swear, and it improved her disposition to no end. Now she's as sweet as the day is long.
He looked at Lindsay seriously.
Can't have too many oldsters around, though. Disturbs the ideology. Bad enough with those pesky cataclysts and their post-human schemes. Keep 'em behind wire in quarantine. Even these kids keep sneaking in.
It's kind of you to allow them here.
I need the foreign exchange. CK finances their research. But they won't amount to much. Those super-brights can't concentrate on anything for long.
He snorted, then snatched up a bill of lading.
I need the money. Look at these carbon dioxide imports. It's the damn trees gobbling it up.
He sighed.
I need those trees, though. Their mass helps with the orbital dynamics. These circumlunar orbits are hell.
I'm glad matters are in good hands. Pong Pian School smiled sadly.
I suppose. Things never work out the way you planned them. Good thing, though, or the mechs would have taken over long ago.
The cat jumped into Pong Pian School's lap, and he scratched its chin. The animal emitted a rumbling sound that Lindsay found oddly soothing.
This is my cat Saturn, the old shaper said. Say hello to Lindsay, Saturn.
The cat ignored him. I had no idea you liked animals.
couldn't stand him at first. Hair just paws off the little beast. Gets into everything. Dirty as a hog, too. Ever seen a hog, by the way? I have a few imported. Incredible creatures. The tourists just marvel.
I must have a look before I leave.
Animals in the air these days. Not literally, I mean. Though we did have some trouble with loose hogs running off to the freefall zone. I mean this bio-morality from Tsarina Cluster. Another cataclysm fad.
You think so?
Well, the warden mused, maybe not. You start trifling with ecology and it's hard to find a place to stop. I've had a slip of this cat's skin shipped off to the Ring Council. Have to clone off a whole gene line of them. Because of the mice, you know. Little vermin are overrunning everything.
A planet might be better, Lindsay said. More space.
I don't hold with messing with gravity wells, Pong Pianskul said. It's just more room for error. Don't tell me you've fallen for that, Mavridis.
The world needs dreams, Lindsay said.
You're not going to start on about levels of complexity, I hope.
Lindsay smiled. No.
Good. When you came in here unwashed and with no shoes on, I concluded the worst.
They say the hogs and I had a lot in common, Lindsay said.
Pong Pianskul stared, then laughed.
Ha! Ha! Glad to see you're not standing on your dignity. Too much dignity cripples a man. Fanatics never laugh. I hope you can still laugh when you're breaking worlds to the leash.
Surely someone will get a good chuckle out of it.
Well, you'll need your humour, friend, because these things never work out as you plan. Reality's a horde of mice nibbling away in the basement of your dreams. You know what I wanted here, don't you? A preserve for humanity and the human way of life, that's what. Instead, I've ended up with a huge stage set full of tourist shills and cataclysm fry brains.
It was worth a try, Lindsay said.
That's it. Break an old man's heart, Pong Pianskul said. A consoling lie wouldn't have hurt.
Sorry, Lindsay said. I've lost the skill.
Better get it back in a hurry, then. It's still a wide, wicked schismatrix out there, detente or no detente.
Pong Pianskul brooded.
Those fools in Tsarina Cluster, selling out to aliens. What's to become of the world? I hear some idiot wants to sell Jupiter.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, sell it off to some group of intelligent gas bags. A scandal, isn't it? Some people will do anything to suck up to aliens. Oh, sorry, no offense.
He looked at Lindsay and saw that he was not insulted.
It won't come to anything. Alien embassies never do. Luckily, aliens all seem to have a lot more sense than we do, with the possible exception of the investors. Investors, indeed. Just a bunch of interstellar pests and nosy parkers. If aliens show up in force, I swear I'll put the whole Republic under the tightest quarantine this side of a Ring Council session. I'll wait till society disintegrates totally. I'll be fated by then, but the locals can move out to pick up the pieces. They'll see then that there was sense in my little game preserve after all.
I see. Hedging humanity's bets. You were always a clever gambler, Neville.
The shaper was pleased. He sneezed loudly, and the startled cat leaped from his lap across the desk, clawing papers.
Sorry, he said. Bacteria and cat hairs. Never got used to them.
I have a favor to ask, Lindsay said. I'm leaving for Tsarina Cluster, and would like to take one of the locals with me.
Someone dying into the world? You always handled that well in Dimbowska. Certainly.
No, a youngster.
Out of the question. A terrible precedent. Wait a moment. Is it Abelard Gomez?
The very same.
I see. That boy troubles me. He has Constantine blood, did you know? I've been watching the local genetics. Genius turns up in that line like a bad roll of the dice.
I'm doing you a favor, then.
I suppose so. Sorry to see you go, Abelard,
But with your current ideological cast, you're a bad influence. You're a cultural hero here, you know.
I'm through with the old dreams. My energy's back, and there's a new dream loose in Sarina Cluster. Even if I can't believe it, at least I can help those who do. He stood up, stepping back prudently as the cat inspected his ankles. Good luck with the mice, Neville.
You too, Abelard.